Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Winchester Radio, our podcast. We're going to be talking about the episode Man's Best Friend with Benefits tonight, the 15th episode of the 8th season. We do have a special guest from that episode, so I'll just let everybody know again that we do not take call-in questions unless otherwise noted with the guest, and we're very excited to have Michelle Morgan with us, who played Portia, who's James Familiar. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Very cool. You were great fun on that episode, so it's going to be fun to talk to you. It seemed like an interesting character to play, and when you got the script or heard about the episode, were you thinking, goodness, my alter ego is a dog?
I was actually so excited. I was so excited because I love dogs, and I'm such a dog person. not really a cat person. I'm more of a dog person. So as soon as I got the script, I just started looking at dogs, and I just thought it was so much fun. And just the idea, because dogs, especially like domesticated dogs, they have such an innocence about them and such a strength, you know, and especially mm-hmm. being a guard dog, like a Doberman, it was just so excited. I was so excited mm-hmm. to do it. It was so much mm-hmm. fun. Mm-hmm.
Did you get to work with the dog much? Did you get to work with the dog very much? Because you didn't have many scenes with it.
Yeah, well, the thing is that when the dog is on camera, then I'm not on
camera.
You're
not,
so,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So there was, so I didn't get to work with them as much as some other cast members, I hear. a lot of other people had a lot of fun with the dog just trampling on them in the middle of scenes, which was interesting to hear. But I didn't get to work with them as much personally, but I got to see them on set and just play with them and watch them, and they were amazing. It was I love Dobermans as well. Like, I was thinking about buying a Doberman right after that. I was like, I just want to have a Doberman, a nice big guard dog who loves you and is so sweet, but so, you know, commands the room. And it was so much fun mm-hmm. to actually impersonate that in a character. So,
yeah, they were absolutely beautiful, beautiful dogs. But they looked big even for Dobermans, which are big anyway. They looked like,
oh yeah, they were pretty big.
Big for Dobermans.
And there was actually, I believe there was three of them. Don't quote me on that. There might have been more than three, but there was three of them that they used interchangeably for different different scenes and stuff. And it was so interesting because every single one had kind of a different personality. So they were like, oh, no, that one, he's very serious, doesn't like to be touched. He does the serious scenes. I was like, oh, okay. And then you have the other ones that are very playful and they like, you know, they love people and they love to play. And it was interesting. I had no idea that was the way that they kind of had, you know, like how they would cast dogs sometimes, because certain ones were just a little bit more, you know, business, really. Like, I've never seen a dog on set that was just so not interested in me. And then the other two were like, so like, they were just regular dogs just running around. They want to be pet. But there was one that was like, no, I'm not having it. He's like, I'm walking away. I don't care for any of this. It was so interesting.
He's there for his scenes and that's it. No playing.
Yeah. Sorry?
He was there for his scenes and that's it. No playing.
Yeah, that was it. He was like, I want to go back to my trailer. I'm done. Yeah. I'm going back to my trailer.
Yeah, this have this serious business here. Playing around.
Oh, I was just saying there was other animals on set, like the cat who played Philippe Lachat. There mm-hmm. was a cat, and he turns into the cat, and that was an interesting experience as well, because actually the I don't even know what it's called, but basically when they slap the chart thing to tell you like the time stamp, basically they clicked it and the cat freaked out. So basically the shot was done. They couldn't do anything about it. The cat was not having it. He did not like that sound, and he was not gonna play nice. So that was really interesting too. I was like, oh, so I guess we just lost a whole day without the cat.
Oh,
we had
no.
to bring him back, I guess,
yeah.
for another time.
They They don't like loud noises. I understand, though. It's kind of funny, if I, like anything else, you get experience. So I would think if the cat had been filming before, you might be used to the sound. But who knows? Animals, you really can't guess. You can do your best and know them really well, but you just never know what they're going to be.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing from a lot of the trainers on set. They were like, you know, you just really never know. You try your best, and a lot of them are good one day, and then some days they're like, I'm not going to do it today. I don't feel like it.
Was it in the script that it was a Doberman, or I just wondered if they decided that later on, or...
No, it was in the script that it was a Doberman, which helped me with my choice in terms of creating Portia, just in terms of how strong I wanted her to be. So, they were very specific that she was a Doberman.
Okay. I just wondered. That.
Can you tell us about the process, where how you got hired, the audition and everything?
Well, this is actually one of the first times that this has ever happened. I heard about it a lot of times, but it never personally happened to me, where I did an audition and I taped it and sent it over to Vancouver, and they booked me off of my audition tape. Usually how it works is you do an audition tape and then they fly you down, or they bring you down and they want you to test and actually audition in the room. But in this case, I just auditioned via tape, and they were happy with everything, and I just got a call that I booked it, and I was so ecstatic and really surprised, actually, but really ecstatic.
Awesome. You were fantastic in the role. I just absolutely loved your character, and you did a really great job with the character.
Mm-hmm.
For
yes. Thank you so much. I was just trying so hard to make her strong, but not, but still lovable, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hope that came across, because I've been amazed by all of the Supernatural fans. Like, they are so amazing. They're so supportive, and they love the show, and they clearly love, you know, a lot of the guest star choices that the production
mm-hmm.
made. So I'm so excited and so happy to be a part of anything to do with Supernatural. You guys are amazing.
Well, you never know. You might get invited to some conventions too. Supernatural has a lot of conventions around the world.
Yeah, that's true. And also with Supernatural, a lot of characters just kind of pop back up. So you never know.
Right.
Portia might come back.
That is true, because both your character and the character of James survived Supernatural, which
is we are
easy.
Alive. Which is unusual, right?
And on the road several weeks. You could absolutely come back through again sometime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're just driving around in a car. We're just waiting for, you know, Sam and Dean to call us back. Pretty much it.
Had you watched Supernatural before you got the part?
I actually loved Supernatural. I was a huge Supernatural fan for the first, probably the first two seasons, almost two seasons. And then I just kind of fell off, just in terms of when it was airing. I guess it wasn't airing at the time that I could see it. And then I missed a couple of episodes, and then I just kind of was like, okay, I'm going to wait until, you know, they come out on box sets and start watching them. And then I just fell off the wagon, kind of, but I love Supernatural. And then because I booked the role, I went back and I started watching from about season 5 and on, and I just fell in love with the show again, so I'm sure I'm still going to be watching it, and I'm going to be a fan like you guys, going crazy, saying, oh my gosh, Sam and Dean! For sure. And they are, it's so unbelievable how they are on set. They are almost exactly the same as their characters, like Gerard and Jensen. Like, they're just like, Gerard and Jensen are, they act exactly like brothers, and very similar to their characters in terms of how they tease each other and everything like that. It was like, this is amazing.
We hear they're a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. They don't stop playing on set. But that's the amazing thing too, because they're like, everybody on set was just so hardworking, but also like just very laid back and very inviting. And Gerard and Jensen were exactly the same. They were just so, you know, sweet and fun and full of life, and they just never stopped playing or joking around. I was like, this is unbelievable. But it was so much, so it was so much fun shooting the show. So much fun. It was the best 10 days I ever had. And Vancouver was amazing, just being out there, because I'm from Toronto, which is very flat, and Vancouver has the mountains and the water, and it was breathtaking. It was beautiful.
Yes, it is a beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hardest thing you had to film?
For Supernatural, for this particular episode?
Yeah.
The hardest thing. I don't really know. I mean, everything was so much fun, and I felt like everybody, because the set was the way that it was, and everybody was so inviting and so sweet. I just felt like everything was easy, and everything was just fun. I can't even really think of anything that was really difficult to shoot. I guess it's probably the first scene, because the first scene was actually shot on the first day that I arrived on set, and it was just the idea of you know, these characters and these people who've been on this set for so long, and almost everybody, including the cast and the crew, have been working on the show since inception. So they've been part of the show for about 8 years, and it was really nerve-wracking coming in, because I was like, oh, you know, I'm like the new girl in a new school, and I was really nervous, but everybody was so nice, so it made it so easy and so much fun. So I guess I don't really have anything. I can't really think of anything.
Oh, that's okay. That's good. I'm glad it was a fun experience.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That first scene is just so adorable. I absolutely just loved it. How Sam's so excited about the dog. And, you know, and then he's telling Dean all about it, you know, don't, you know, just stay the one night. And, you know, and Dean looks, yes, he can stay when he sees you. It's probably one of my favorite scenes ever. It was so cute.
I love it. And actually that line that Dean threw there was actually not in the script. He actually threw that in there. And it worked so perfectly.
Oh, yeah. So that was
so cool.
Yeah, he just kind of threw that in there, and he was throwing in, he was just ad-libbing and throwing in different lines and different takes, and I guess that's the one they chose, and it worked. I thought it worked out great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very fun scene.
Yeah.
This is such a kind of silly comment, but I loved the dog collar, the red dog collar with the.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous, but they actually had about, at least 5 or 6 options of this dog collar. And that dog collar, that was the only collar that was actually a dog collar. All the other ones were like these little belts and just little sashes, or ones that they made specifically for that to look really pretty and nice. But they ended up, the producers ended up going with the dog collar. And when I put it on, I was on set, and one of the crew members said, I bought that exact same collar for one of my dogs.
Oh,
so I'm wearing a real dog collar, for real. Yep.
Yeah, well, it was beautiful.
I wanted to keep one as a souvenir, but I didn't get a chance to. I totally forgot to ask and get one, but I really wanted to keep one as a souvenir of Portia.
Yeah, and then you could get your Doberman and have her wear it.
Yeah, exactly. And I would never forget that I was on Supernatural.
Well, it looks great on you. It was great. I would wear it as a necklace. It was gorgeous. Yeah,
it really was. Well, remember, like, I remember when I was in high school, they were always wearing, like, neck chokers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of, like, a similar style where with the neck choker. So maybe it'll come back. Maybe Portia will bring in, you know, the new trend, the new style. Everybody will be wearing dog collars.
Were there? You mentioned how fun and the guys joking around and everything. were there any scenes or anything that might get put, like, on the gag reel on the DVDs or anything?
I think maybe, perhaps, there was this scene where James Frampton, my boyfriend, he does the flash and then basically pushes them and they fall over the bed and fall on the sides. So when they were doing this in the scene, obviously they weren't using the stunt guys yet. So they were like, you know, he's just going to go like this and you guys just jump over there or something. And then they would literally jump, like, just on other takes, they would always jump on the bed in all these, like, random slow motion poses. It was hilarious. It was so much funny. I was like, really? How am I supposed to keep a straight face right now? I don't know how I'm supposed to do it. And they're, like, moving in slow motion in the background on the bed. I'm like, okay, just stop. It was so much fun. Oh, my gosh, those guys are crazy.
That's very funny.
With James's character was chained to the bed most of the episode. Was it kind of awkward doing scenes with a guy who's chained to a bed?
It was definitely kind of awkward, because the only thing that was awkward, I think, after, when I was thinking about it, was like, oh, it was really weird, because it was like, especially being in a scene, you're like, you're fully in control of the scene because he is, like, just chained. He can't move. So that was, I never really thought about it until, you know, afterwards when I was kind of watching how it kind of came out. And I loved how it looked, but I never really took note of that in my head. I guess it was just kind of like I was just trying to be in the moment and take that in. So, yeah, but, yeah, it was a little strange. I think it was stranger for him, because those metal things were, yeah, they were actually pretty heavy. I was like, are these real chains?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, I was thinking really they were, you know, made by the prop department to be, just look like metal and not be so heavy or uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I've seen that before. I worked on another show and basically my character was this bad high school girl, and we just basically chained up this girl with these chains. But, yeah, they were super, super light, so I thought they were going to be the same kind of thing. But, no, these were pretty heavy. Pretty heavy. I mean, if they lost the key, I don't even know what would have happened.
Oh, no.
Bolt cutters.
Campbell would just be stuck living on the Supernatural set for the rest of his life.
Forever. And everybody would just randomly walk in and, you know, throw him some food or throw him a bone.
I would imagine that scene is, you know, a little bit odd to you, but it must have been even stranger for Jared and Jensen to be, you know, carrying on this long conversation with the poor Christian chained to the bed.
Yeah, I guess so. They were just so professional. They've been doing this for so long, and they've been, it's 8 seasons, amazing. And, they just know what they're doing, you know. They're just so professional, and they have so much fun at the same time. So it's like you just know that they're doing what they love, you know.
Mhm. Mhm.
Was there any talk of, like, maybe in the witch bar there maybe having other actual animals in the scenes to represent the familiars, or was it just always supposed to be people? Because I thought it would have been cool if they showed, you know, like, a witch over in the corner with his dog or cat or something, but instead everybody was all people.
That is so interesting. They never mentioned that in the script or anything like that, and now, come to think of it, I totally agree that would have been cool to kind of see all different animals, because also you see Philippe Lachat and you see him turn into his cat self. So you would wonder what, you know, if the other characters were going to become animals as well. But no, there wasn't really any discussion regarding that. I guess it was just implied that they may become animals.
Was the witch bar on set, or was it at a location that they fixed up to look like the bar?
That was actually a location. It was an amazing location. The walls were exactly what we needed. Like it was just like this nice old cathedral. I think it was a bank at some point or something. It was an amazing little bar, but I think it was a bar/restaurant, and it was actually under renovation, so it was kind of scary. We were calling the basement the dungeon because the basement was just filled with all of the construction stuff, and they were like, all the cast can wait down in the dungeon. We're like, oh, God, we're going down to the dungeon, but... Yeah, but it was on location. So it was great, and I liked it because I find when you're on set, you get really, really hot when you're in the studio, but at least on location, that location was so nice and cool, and I guess it was because it was freezing cold outside on that day, so I was totally okay with it.
I would guess the dungeon would have been kind of cool, too, because, you know, most dungeons are cold.
Yeah, that's true.
I know you've got you're busy this evening. Got a lot of things planned going on this evening.
Too many things planned. Going to the ACTRA Awards, which is here in Canada. We have our union, our actors union is ACTRA, and we're having some awards tonight, and I have a friend of mine, Shannon Cook, who's being nominated, so we're going to go there and support him, and then right after that, I'm going to beeline it out because I have to go to my little sister's 19-year-old birthday party, which is going to be so much fun. But basically, here in Canada, she gets to drink, so she is over the moon excited about the fact that she's going to have her first legal shot, and I have to be there or she's going to kill me. So ACTRA Awards is going to have to wait. I'm just going to be able to kind of make a cameo and then slip out.
Right, I agree. Little sister's birthday is way more important, I agree.
It is. And I mean, when you're, you know, like in this career, like things come up all the time and you really have to set boundaries and kind of, you know, say what you're willing to do and what you're not. And at the end of the day, I just put my family first. And I think I've never gone wrong with doing that. I've never felt bad with doing that.
So that's the way important. To be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So hey, Vinny, are you there? Sorry?
I am.
Our third co-host just popped in. So Michelle is here, telling, but about to take off. It's been fun. I'm sorry you missed her, but or almost.
Hi.
Do you have a question for Michelle, Vinny?
I don't know what you guys already asked, so I don't want to be redundant.
Maybe I'll change my answer.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
That's right.
And it'll be a totally different answer. You never know.
Good point.
Do you have any future projects in the works?
Well, I recently, right before I shot Supernatural, I shot a movie with the Trailer Park Boys. I don't know if you guys know about them, but they were this crazy comedic phenomenon here in Canada, and their show ran for a million seasons as well, and then they did a movie as well, and then now they're shooting another film. It's kind of a mockumentary based on the characters, so it's like Mike Smith and Rob Wells and J.P. Tremblay and Pat Roche, and they kind of go out on their own, and it's this adventure of how they're going to make their own network, and they're very, very vulgar. So the entire movie is about how they want to make this vulgar network where anything goes and they can do whatever they want, and it's just basically their journey to kind of get this network seen to the world, which is, oh my gosh, the craziest adventure in the world. I don't even know how this movie is going to be released. Some of the things that are happening, I'm like, what's going on? Like, there's Tom Green and there's Carrot Top doing some crazy stuff in the film as well, where I just don't even know. It is seriously a film that is, I don't think the world has seen anything like this. And I don't know if the world will ever see anything like this ever again. So I look forward to seeing what happens because they're crazy. And then I also did a mini series called Dark Rising, Warrior of Worlds. It's like the fourth installment of this Dark Rising. I guess it's not really a franchise. It kind of. It's basically they just have a bunch of different films that came before it, and this is a mini series based on the film. And it stars it's basically about, I don't know, it's a really strange thing, but it's a sci-fi. So I guess it competes very much with I guess Lost Girl, but more Lost Girl than Supernatural. But it's based on this girl who's Bridget Kingsley is the lead in it, and she is basically this character who goes into this supernatural world where it's almost like a sub-world where you kind of have the same people, but they have different lives because it's like the demon world versus the real world. And it's a fun little concept, but that's basically what I shot all summer, and that was really fun to be a part of as well. Just because I got to be out in Sudbury, which is strange, but I got to be out in northern Ontario, and we were all basically stuck up in the same hotel all together, so I got my college dorm experience, which was amazing. It was so much fun because everybody was there, and I went to university, but I never stayed on campus, so I just never had that experience of I'm able to just kind of walk out my door and there's a party. And when I was on set for Dark Rising, that's how it was. I can walk out my door and there was a party in every single room going down the hallway. I was like, oh, wow. This is like being in a dorm room. It was amazing.
That was very cool.
Yeah, so I had an amazing, amazing summer, well, year last year. It was filled of great things, and this year started out even more amazing with Supernatural, so.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're catching up on the show.
Yeah.
Again at the beginning. And also, welcome to the Supernatural family. And want to tell everybody to follow you on Twitter. If they're not, mm-hmm. they're not already.
Michelle Morgan won.
Great.
Because somebody actually stole, they impersonated me when I first started acting. It was really strange. So then I had to go with Michelle Morgan one or nothing. Yeah, so that was funny.
Oh.
That was really funny. It was one of my best friends, she calls me and she's like, why didn't you tell me that you had a Twitter account? I'm like, I don't have a Twitter account. She's like, yes, you do. I'm like, no, I don't. And then after she's like, okay, go to Michelle Morgan, like, on Twitter. I was like, okay. I'm like, are you sure it's me? She's like, go to the name and then tell me if I'm confused. And I went to the Twitter account, and it was basically all of my pictures, and it was plastered everywhere, and it was people, they were talking, and they were saying, you know, they're making me sound really busy. They were like, oh, I'm, you know, flying into New York, flying into L.A. today, I'm exhausted, and I was like, well, I'm just sitting at home eating breakfast, but okay. I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll let that go for a little bit. But yeah, after a while, I decided, okay, I got to get a handle on this and open my own Twitter account. So it's Michelle Morgan 1.
And you saw Michelle, M-I-S-H-A-E-L, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's because my dad's name was Michael. My dad's name is Michael, and my mom's name is Sharon. So they put the S into Michael, and it's really Michelle, I guess. But I've always grown up saying Michelle.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
It's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Tried to do something special, but now it just confuses everybody. Everybody's like, when I go to castings, they're like, Michelle? My guess, it's Michelle.
Well, I know you need to get off of here and get started for your big evening.
Yes, thank you. Gotta go get
thank
pretty
you.
Now.
Thank you so much for calling in. We've had so much fun talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we really hope Portia and James come back to the show. Y'all were great.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yep.
That means so much to me. And thank you guys all the Supernatural fans and the Supernatural fan family for, you know, supporting me and adding me on Twitter and adding me on Instagram. You guys are amazing. I look forward to possibly doing some more Supernatural stuff, hopefully, in the future.
We will keep our fingers crossed.
Yep.
Yay. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Yep.
Thank you, Michelle.
Take care.
You too. Everybody listening to our show, don't leave because we're still going to keep talking about the episode. So.
She's super nice. I'm sorry I missed everything.
Oh, she was great. She's fun. I really like that she said that Jensen, Dean's line, yeah, she can stay, when Sam thought there was a Doberman and it turned out to be her. She said that Jensen ad-libbed that line.
Really?
So I thought that was hilarious because that line was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that seems very like a very necessary line. I'm surprised it wasn't in the original script.
Yeah,
so
she said it was not in the script.
She said he ad-libbed quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, check you out, Jensen Ackles.
Yeah, good job. Too bad he didn't ad lib more in this episode. And What?
I think I liked the episode more than most people did. There were some really cute moments in it. I loved Portia and James. I thought their characters were so interesting, and I really could watch more of them. I think they could, like, have a spinoff or something. I love their characters. And there were just a lot of really cute Sam and Dean moments in it, and I liked the episode.
I
was bored for most of the episode. I think the best thing about the episode was actually Portia, the character on the after, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
She was the highlight of the episode, which is good that she was in so much of the episode, because script-wise, I was not super stoked about this episode.
Yeah, I didn't think it was written very well. Occasionally, I did not recognize Sam and Dean. I think they said and did certain things. I was like,
I agree. As much as I like the line when Dean says that was hot, and Sam agrees that that was hot. I love the line delivery, and I thought it was funny, but it didn't seem like Sam at all to like concur with that.
Yeah,
to a stranger, to a woman whose belly was just rubbing.
where I can totally see Sam thinking it was hot because, she's hot. And so, and her getting mad and everything, that would be hot. And so, but Sam has never openly said anything like that in all 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But I did think it was cute. I was like, I can't believe he just said that. I think it's so cute.
Yeah,
I thought it was
really adorable, but it was very out of character.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you go back to the seasons, it feels kind of canonical that both Sam and Dean would like a strong woman, because if you look back at every conquest, it tends to be a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, but just Sam saying it out loud, I could even give him, like, him saying it after she left the room to just Dean, but him saying in front of her felt really awkward.
Yeah, I agree. I liked, like, the delivery, and they did a good job, and I could totally see Dean saying it, but I recall, when I first heard Sam say that, I took a step back,
definitely.
It wasn't awful, but it was definitely a little bit different. For me, I liked that they remember that Dean does not like witches. That's been very consistent over the seasons, absolutely, but it was I can't believe it. Dean not know what a familiar is? Oh, come on.
Yeah.
And gosh, there was something else that went right along with that. It just, there's no way. I'm sorry.
I don't know if this
is
where you're
going. Forget it.
I don't know if this is where you're going, but it was weird to me in the script that not only does Dean not know what a familiar is, but Portia explains that some witches split their time between human and familiar, or human
mm-hmm.
and animal. But
yeah.
then later on, he wants to know which came first, the chicken or the egg. And
yeah.
obviously, by Portia's earlier statement, it would have to be the person, the human.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like
mm-hmm.
it was a really unnecessary line. I think there were opportunities for Dean to be sleazy that were lost, and then the moments that where he was attempting to be sleazy didn't, they kind of clunked for me.
Yeah.
Like, I kept waiting for the typical, like, there's a woman who came in whose belly Sam scratched on Dean's bed. Where was that joke?
Mm. What bothered me about that scene was that, and you know what, it's a very cute scene, and it was fun, and it was well played by everybody, and it was very adorable to have Sam, you know, still obviously the dog fan, and like, wow, this is great,
mm-hmm.
you know, a dog, and now Dean, don't be mad, you know, but can she stay the night, and we'll find a home tomorrow, and all that was very cute, the way it was played and all that, but, and I get that maybe Portia, to sort of hide or sneak out, she went in her familiar form to get to the hotel. But how did she know what room, you know? Why didn't she just drive over, you know? And I can see maybe she didn't want to be seen at the motel as Portia the person, so she showed up
mm-hmm.
as a dog.
She said,
he opened the door, she should have gone in and become Portia and not
yeah,
jumped on the bed and rolled
her,
over and all this other stuff.
I got her logic for showing up as a dog, but I didn't get her,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get the character logic for remaining the dog while she's interacting with Sam as a dog.
Yeah.
Other than to play for the joke later.
Well, I thought it was...
finding out that Jensen ad-libbed that line, then scripturally, where was the joke?
Mm-hmm.
I thought... Didn't she say that she chose the form of dog because it lets her know what kind of person people are? It tells her, you know, she can know if they're trustworthy,
why,
that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't she have a line
but
like
then
that?
Why didn't she stay a dog for Dean?
I'm assuming that, you know, she once she met Sam and she saw that Sam was good and trustworthy and all that, that she, you know, Dean's his brother, James knew them, Dean would be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, I'll give you that. But then she's the one that texted them. She's the one that called, like, that got them over there because she thought they were in her last resort.
Right.
It had to have been already, like, a bit of I don't know. It just, I could fan wank it and make it work, but I think it was clunky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole part of, I wish that they had explained it. The whole familiar thing more, even though they went out of their way not to. She really didn't give Dean any information. But I wish they would have let her give him a bit more information, because I wish they would have said something about how, like, people decide to be witches, and that's how they become witches, you know, through a decision they make, and they go through the process or whatever. That it's the same thing with becoming a familiar. A person decides to become a familiar. You know, I wish they would have said more about that to let us know how it actually works.
Mm-hmm. And also about, like, when they are and aren't familiars, do they have to be a familiar a certain amount of time? I mean, we know that Portia and James had a relationship, but she's sleeping with him as a dog towards the beginning. And I'm like,
yeah, she's in bed as a dog.
And I can see that if she was strictly a familiar, but she's not. So,
And
well,
my theory is that this doesn't come out, and I feel like to be a familiar, you are more likely to be the stronger of the two witches. I don't know. I feel like it takes more power to become an animal. That's just my theory. But, yeah, I didn't. Is it just more comfortable for her? because I don't understand why she was, in the beginning, she's a dog. Like, you would think in order to comfort him, she would take her human form.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way I take it is, you know, if you're a familiar, you are proud and enjoy being a dog as much as you do as a person. So, you know, she could just choose, you know, she just chose whichever one she wanted to be because she was just as happy and proud to be that part of her as she was the human part of her. And as for the comfort part, I know sometimes there's times when I would prefer getting comforted by my dog than by a person.
I don't dispute that at all. It wasn't so much his comfort. Like, I question as an animal. Like, I feel like if my dog, if I'm crying, my dog does come and, like, literally comes and licks my tears away. I feel like if she could become a human and go, "Mommy, what's wrong?" she would.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the same line of thinking, like, I feel like if Portia could go, "Yo, what was that demon? What's going on?" Instead
mm-hmm.
of, you know, remaining nonverbal. It's comforting to James, but if I was a witch that could go between the two, I'd be super curious, and I'd be like, I need my human vocal cords for this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so cool that an episode that most everybody, you know, is like, it's not one of the best, you know, it's just a filler, it's just a monster of the week, it's not that great. But it has really inspired some great conversations, and I think that
mm-hmm.
is wonderful.
Yes.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been really, and I'm glad because it is the kind of episode that on the surface could be very easily forgotten, but what's being discussed, people are taking very strong sides about, too. And
mm-hmm.
I find that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who were, and Benny, you and I talked about it earlier this week, about they brought race into the episode, and you and I were talking, neither one of us saw it during the episode that it was, you know, as a black woman wearing a collar.
Yeah, I was wondering how much
we had
to get into on the podcast, but
yeah, we didn't
when I got up Thursday morning and started seeing people react in that way, I was floored because it
mm-hmm.
never once occurred to me to view Portia by her race.
I didn't either.
And I know that the idea of, I was telling Becky, I always think back to when Sarah Gamble was interviewed about the season 2 finale about All Hell Breaks Loose, and a lot of people were very upset about, I just blanked on Aldous Hodge's character's name.
Jake,
thank you. Oh, the James, that's wrong, that's this episode. About Jake being black and being the bad guy and then dying. Spoilers if you haven't watched season 2, sorry. why you'd be listening, I don't know. And I remember an interview with her saying in her character notes when she was writing the script, she described him as Matt Damon-esque or similar to Matt Damon. And you really can't get too much different. I mean, Aldous Hodge is not the same race, much taller, in my opinion, better looking. So, you know, not exactly Matt Damon. So, you know, the idea of it, everybody's got to work. If that actor is the best actor for the job, they did the best job in the audition for the reading, and I don't think that a script should have to modify that to worry about whether they're being PC or not. I think as someone who is non-white, I'm not saying anybody else has to feel this way, I'm really trying to word this very carefully, I'm almost offended that people are offended on her behalf. Because I feel like the minute she walked onto the screen, then people went, "Oh, pretty black girl," instead of saying "pretty girl." And it's that idea of when you see, you know, and it's become a trope and a joke, but when you watch a horror movie and you see the black man and you think he's going to die, it's become a trope, but you have to look at yourself and think, why did I see that person walk on screen and automatically identify him by his race when you don't see Sam and Dean, for instance, you don't think, oh, those two white brothers.
Right.
And so when you can say that color, like people will say that it's impossible to be colorblind, but I didn't see Portia as anything other than a woman. And maybe that is a privilege I have because I don't have a definite race being biracial. I don't have a defined race. So I don't view it's hard for me to view people as a race unless it's a racially charged moment. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense to me. And as I'm 100% white, that's my, you know, I'm all white. And I just saw her as, you know, a gorgeous lady and who kicked butt. And I, you know, not once during the episode did I think, oh, my gosh, that's so racist, a black woman wearing a collar and calling, you know, James Master. I saw it as a whole familiar witch deal. I didn't see it anything other than that. And then the next morning, and I loved the episode at the first night. And like I was telling Vinny, the next day I woke up and I'm reading all these people who were all upset and everything. I was like, wow, am I just blind or, you know, am I not, I don't, you know, am I not as aware of things, race things that I should be? Or, you know, I was like, so I had to talk to Vinny. He's like, you know, I'm worried about myself.
I was gonna make a horrible joke and be like, I'm sorry, did you have to call your token black friend?
Well,
for anybody listening, I'm half black and half Mexican, so
well,
that's where that came from.
you are my friend that I talked about supernatural things too. So there
you
go.
Yeah, we do it every Thursday morning. But like I said, I was talking to a friend on Twitter, and she's white, and both of our families are Southern. So she did, she's like, I felt this was like knee-jerk, almost what I got from her comments was almost like a guilt kind of feeling, and I totally get that, and I will validate those feelings. I 100% validate anybody's feelings who felt uncomfortable in that way. I just, on the same hand, I have to validate my own feelings of being offended by you being offended, which is a really bizarre thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like saying that, because this was the only racial thought I had watching this episode, and it was super fleeting. It was being proud of my show for once again having an interracial couple. Because that's what I felt when we met Cassie as Dean's ex in season one. I was so proud of my show because you don't see that. And me having interracial parents, that's the closest I get to seeing myself on television, like seeing a representation of myself is when things like that happen. Because when you're biracial, no one really looks like you. There are some people that you can pass for, you know, white, Mexican. I get people assume I'm Mexican where I live because that's the majority population. And I'm brown, so it's just a default. Everybody who's brown is Mexican here. You should speak Spanish. And people are really, really confused when they look at me. So you don't really see yourself on television. So for me, I saw a biracial couple or interracial couple, and I was totally stoked. But it was such a fleeting moment because that is a little more, I hate to use the word taboo for that, but you just don't see it on television very often to see an interracial couple have, even, you know, and then to go as far as to have them have sexual relations on screen. Or intimate moments on screen. You know,
I've been telling you to watch Scandal.
Yes, you've been telling me to watch Scandal. But again, to me, that's far more groundbreaking because there's just a huge history of connotations with that and such. So for me, personally, that's a huge thing. I just, when you get into the whole, you know, platforming off of that, then for me, I feel like, are you telling me that a black woman can't be in a sub-dom relationship because she's black if she falls in love with a guy who's white and they happen to both have that kink? Are you saying it's wrong? Because, there, you know, there is the culture on the internet is you don't kink shame. You just don't do that. It's not, you know, your kinks are not my kinks, and that's cool. But it's almost saying, like, you because of the color of your skin, you have to shy away from what gets you off. And I think that's a really almost disturbing way of looking at the show, at this episode. And I was telling that, you know, if you do your research on sub-dom relationships, the sub is the one in control. They're the ones that have the most control, which is why I was saying I wonder if she's the more powerful witch. So,
and she specifically said in the episode that she chose James.
Yeah, she chose him. She's not his pet. And I saw a couple of conversations on my timeline, off my timeline, just around on Tumblr. And I don't understand Tumblr, but I try. I really try. Where people were upset that, you know, he scolds her and she turns into a dog. And Becky and I were talking about it. I saw that as, I'm not listening to you anymore. And she turned into a dog and walked off on him. I didn't see it as he shamed her into being a dog because, again, going in the context of the show, she doesn't find anything shameful about being a familiar. So to assume that she finds that form shameful, I feel like the viewer is degrading her, not the writers of the episode.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even think any of this, so I guess that makes three of us. I didn't even think about that at all. To me, it was a familiar and a witch, and my mindset looking at the relationship came from Supernatural and the rules of the game as they go through Supernatural. I didn't even think that way, and I have a feeling that the writers didn't have any other agenda going on.
No, I wouldn't think so either. It wouldn't be right.
We do know that for the casting aside for Kevin Tan, for example, it specifically asked for an Asian, and it was even ambiguous. You know, they were at that point they were casting male or female. They hadn't even made that concrete. This was Asian. I would be curious to know what the casting side was for Portia. Very curious. Well, obviously for Cassie because of the storyline.
Michelle did say that they had she got the audition through she sent in a video and they liked the video and accepted it right then. But she also said that they had cast the dog before they cast her.
And that's weird because you and I were assuming it was the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. I was surprised about that.
Not that matters because if you think about it, Philippe didn't look anything like his cat form.
It was specifically said in the script that it was a Doberman, she said.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, Philippe looked nothing like his cat form, so I find that to be, you know, fairly irrelevant as far as casting.
Exactly. And he was a white male, and I don't remember if he wore a collar or not, but, you know, he called, you know, his... You know, witch master and everything.
Despite the fact that they, you know, they said that, you know, Portia and James's relationship is something you don't do, I got a way more sexual vibe off of everything Philippe did.
Everything he did, whether he was
talking to Portia, to Spencer, to Dean, I was like, you want to jump on everybody, don't you? And I don't know if that was the act, like in the script, or the director, the actor, kind of doing with that whole like. Sensual cat vibe kind of thing.
I mean, he absolutely went after Dean along with everybody else. You know, he was flirting, you know, very obviously flirting.
Yeah, I did not see one person that he interacted with that he did not flirt with.
The actor playing Philippe looked like a cat. He was a very interesting looking face, and
although,
it was a wonderful choice.
Super weird. I was looking up the actor on IMDb, and there's a in his like actor photos, there's one thing that he, I guess a movie he was in previously, and in the screenshot, he looks like a really young Jensen, and it really threw me off.
And we should
say something about the hair and the cheekbones. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. And the actor's name is Sebastian Gacki, G-A-C-K-I. Mm-hmm. So we should mention that. And
but that was, and I have going completely off topic, but speaking, because we mentioned Philippe, one of the things, it could have been cute, but for some reason I didn't find it cute. The fact that his name was Philippe Lachat and he turned into a cat was just really too on the nose for me. Like, that was way too cutesy on the nose. Like,
yeah, it was like, just hit me over the head next time and it'll feel exactly the same.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
The cat. Get it.
Okay,
you know?
Got it.
I'm like, so everybody who took high school French right there.
I also think some of the dialogue we were talking about earlier about having to do with familiars and what they are and what they do, that we thought, of course, Dean would know that. I guess they put in just in case somebody in the audience didn't know what it was, and it's unfortunate, and that happens on a lot of shows, that sometimes a character is stuck giving more dialogue than usual, or they ordinarily would to a coworker who, of course, would already know what they were talking about,
yeah,
just for the benefit of the audience. But
yeah, and, you know, we talk about that with, you know, poor Sam and his exposition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you always had Giles with his exposition where, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, if you're an usual watcher, you're going, why are you telling me this again? And you forget that some people are just flipping channels and are seeing this for the very first time. Because
mm-hmm.
as a fan, you're like, oh, I know. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then when you're a geek fan, when, you know, Supernatural didn't teach you about familiars, you learned it somewhere else. And you're really
mm-hmm.
like, oh my god. But you know, you do forget that not everyone's a geek.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I would be awesome if everybody was. You know. But and which if you go back last season to when Dean kills Amy Pond, you know, everybody who watches Doctor Who was like, Amy Pond. Anybody who didn't, it didn't matter. It wasn't necessary for the script that you got that little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel like in this script, there were things that it made it necessary for you to get it. And if you didn't get it, and I did feel, going on that too, I spent half the episode thinking I was crazy for not remembering who James was.
Yeah.
I
and I'm
like,
did we see him before? Where was he in?
He's
a friend of theirs. So I thought it'd be cool. Yeah, but nope.
Yeah, I was like, I would totally remember those eyelashes. Why don't I remember those eyelashes?
He did
have
very
pretty
eyes.
He
was mighty cute. He was mighty cute. Christian Campbell was mighty cute, and he can come back again sometime.
Yeah.
I would
I was watching the episode, and I was like, he's cute. I was texting with my friend Sue, who had already seen the episode. She's an hour ahead of me. He's Ned Campbell's brother. So when he's not, like, I don't think that explains the eyelashes.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was weird that his name is Christian Campbell we had a character on the show named Christian Campbell, played by Corin Nemec. So I'm like, no, you're not Christian Campbell. Corin Nemec is Christian Campbell.
So I spent a good portion of this episode going, why don't I remember this guy? And I've said before that I have like a mental problem as far as seasons four and five go that I mix up things. So I was like, did I mix up an episode? Did I miss an episode? I'm so confused. And I was like, wait a minute. You're giving me way too much exposition about James. He never existed before this. Oh.
I
wish they'd have told what he did to save their lives.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to bring in a character that Sam and Dean met off screen and had a case with, I need more.
Mm.
I personally would have preferred for them to maybe pick a case from before. Excuse me. And I get that you can't always get the same actors and stuff, but maybe like
mm-hmm.
a fringe character in an episode that
awesome.
Maybe we didn't have to see, but at least a case that we've seen.
to brought in.
And I do like the idea of Sam and Dean affecting people, because it's always been something that really intrigues me about the show is Sam and Dean pack up and they leave, and these people have to fix their lives. And I find that fascinating that they just go on. They just leave rubble behind them. And then these people have to try to get back to a normal life where
some of them don't.
The things that these people, the people these things go through are the reasons that Sam and Dean, Bobby, Cameron, her husband, and Dean, those are what makes hunters. But a majority of people just go back to their regular life in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that idea. I thought the execution fell a little short.
Yeah. And the actor who played Spencer, Curtis Caravaggio, was in Provenance.
That's right.
Yeah, went all the way back.
And the guy who played the detective in another episode, too? Because he looked super familiar.
The guy who played the detective that played Ed Stoltz, he was in Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. He was the girl's father, college professor.
Yes. I knew he looked familiar. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you say Spencer was in Provenance?
This is like another strange thing. His character's name was Mark Telesca, and I actually know a real person named Mark Telesca.
No way. The Telesca's the ones who got killed at the beginning?
Yeah.
he looks so much older than he did in that episode. I was two young people in the beginning of that episode. And wow, he's aged a lot in the 7 years.
Yeah. It's so strange, though, that he's, like, named for my coworker's husband. I mean, he's not named for him.
That's cool.
They share a name.
And you work in the art world, and that was about a painting.
Yes. Yeah.
Very
and,
cool.
And, yeah, and Mark has a blues band, Blues Dragon. So, you know, it's just very, very strange.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I knew he had been in that episode because I saw it in his, when I was looking at credits and stuff, but I didn't remember who the character was until you just said it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes we get get a minute. It's just a funny story. We have an intern in our office, and, she watches Doctor Who, so we were talking about similar shows and whatever, and I said, well, do you watch Supernatural? And she said, no, and I said, well, you have to. So, you know, she said, well, okay, it sounds like something I would like. And so she's been watching, and she went back, and she started at the very beginning, and I'm like, you know, hang on through the first few episodes, you know, let it get its feed and whatever, and she did, and she's really loving it. I mean, she's watching them like crazy, but occasionally she comes in and comes up with these funny comments about it. And, like one time she says, she goes, Jensen, it seems like he wears, like, lots of lip balm. She says, lips are very pouty. She'll go. And it's just a random comment. And then the other day she goes, okay, she's in the second season. And she says, okay. She said, I feel like I'm really getting a handle on the characters now and who the guys are. And I said, oh, well, good for you. And she goes, yeah. She goes, it seems like Dean is always eating and Sam is always crying.
I
said, well, okay. Well, but that's
yeah,
not all.
Season one, Dean doesn't cry as much.
Well, I said, Dean will cry. I said, you will see that eventually. It is. I said, it's very, you know, it's usually very particular moments and everything. And she feels like Sam's more emotional. And I said, you're right, he is, but things happen to them
The day that she walks in and has her revelation about the single perfect man here, you have to text me.
I will. And she was talking about Hart with Madison dying, and I had to give her the advance, like, little bit warning, you know, with Sam. You know, it's like fandom. You know, I said, yes, sex with Sam. She said, and die. You know, she was like, oh, my God. And then today she texted me a screen cap she took of the very end of season two. And she said, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan, John Winchester, and he's saying he's back. He saved them, and he's going off into the spirit world free. And she's like, oh, my God. She goes, together reunited again. I'm crying.
And I texted her back, and I said, get used to it.
This show's going to miss you do for, like, 8 years. So it's been kind of fun going back and seeing, like, early episodes through her eyes, you know, and how she sees them, and not really having any idea, like what goes on. Like, she's not spoiled at all, despite being in the eighth season for us. She's not spoiled. She doesn't really know too much, and she's a fan, but not quite as fanish as they we are, whatever. But yeah, it's been fun. But I love that. Okay, I think I got a handle on their character. She goes, Dean eats a lot and Sam cries a lot. Oh, gosh. So back to this episode, and we actually, there were a couple of important conversations to the overall arc of this season and recent happenings. And they picked up pretty much right where they left off last week with Sam having just ganked the Hellhound. But I appreciate that. But there were parts of the conversations where I'm like, I really thought we were beyond this, you know, where Sam says, you don't trust me. And it's not that you don't trust me. You only trust yourself. And then Dean having to be convinced all over again that Sam should do this. And then, of course, now Sam, at the very end, we see that Sam is indeed affected by going through these trials, and he's starting to cough up blood. Awesome. And, of course, you know he's not going to tell Dean, which I'm actually okay with as a character decision, because, of course, he's not going to tell him, and Dean wouldn't tell Sam either. He's like, I've made this big deal out of being okay to do this. I'm not going to backtrack. I'm not going to let Dean take over. I can do this, and I'll be okay. So I'm okay with him not telling Dean about that. Dean's not going to be okay with it, but I'm okay with Sam's decision to do that.
I did read though. Somebody tweet us if you remember where this came from. But in all my looking around for this episode, somebody was saying something about, yes, of course, they're not going to tell each other what's going on, and Sam's going to hold this in, and then when he's coughing up blood, he's going to be like, no, trials are fine. I just have tuberculosis. Everything's fine. I was like, oh, that would so be our show. I could totally close the gates of hell, and then I'll get treatment for this tuberculosis.
On a completely different subject, my parents live about an hour out from St. Louis, Missouri, and where this episode was supposed to take place. And the police department and everything was East St. Louis, and they kept showing that. East St. Louis is actually in Illinois, not Missouri. So, there was a little mistake there with that. But I also thought it was interesting that when they showed the outside of the police department, or it said East St. Louis and all that on it, that was back in season 6 when my friends and I went up to Vancouver for VanCon and we got to watch them film some scenes. That was the same building that they used for the police department in Live Free or Twy Hard when Sam walks across the street and meets Dean at the car and they look at some lost people pictures, girls that are lost, and that was the same building they used for that. And so I thought that was pretty cool seeing that. I was like, oh, I've been there. I've sat on those bricks, you know.
Yeah, it's always very cool. And they were in St. Louis, well, East St. Louis, and the last time they were there, things didn't go too well, but that was Skin. Skin took place.
Right. That's what I keep thinking, like, Sam, are you going to go visit Becky? Come on.
Yeah.
Not Becky the fangirl, so Becky from Skin.
Yeah. Oh, and for some reason, I don't even ask me how it got from there to here, but Danielle, Jensen's wife, tweeted today that she's having a girl. They're having a little girl.
Congratulations to Jensen and Danielle. Very good news.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Princess Ackles was actually trending for quite a while on Twitter. And it's like, oh, please don't name her princess. Please don't name her princess.
Oh, God. No, I'm sure Jensen and Danielle will not follow my theory of that most celebrities smoke crack and then name their children. So I'm sure they won't do that. Dara didn't. He has got a perfectly lovely, strong, nice name for his son, Thomas Colton. So I have a feeling that Jensen
will be the same. They will name their daughter after a piece of food or something. So fingers crossed.
or
country.
Or a Star Wars character, you know.
Yeah.
or
well, thankfully, Pilot Inspector's already been taken, so, you know.
it's funny because their names are a little bit unusual. You know, Jensen is a little bit different, and Danielle, it sounds like Danielle, and honestly, I'm not sure the origin of her name and how she spells it.
She was named after a street. Her mother named after a street. And
oh.
And it's her middle name, actually. I think it's her middle name.
Yeah, it's her middle name. Elta, she's named after, I believe, her grandmother for her first name. I think it's her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe great-grandmother. Don't quote me.
Mm-hmm.
And then middle name was her mom saw on a street sign and liked it.
Hmm.
I think that's pretty cool.
So I wouldn't be surprised if their daughter had a little bit unusual name, but hopefully it won't be like Bob Geldof, you know, fluffy Trixie Belle Peaches, and there's like six other names that go along with that, or Apple, we'll name it after fruit,
yeah.
You know, and so, but to each their own, whatever. And really, they'll name their kid and they don't care what any of us think.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, Anakin Fire is taken. They can't have, there's already an Anakin Fire in the world. I know they're probably dying to have that name, but I'm sorry, it's taken.
I'm really upset that your son named his kid Anakin before I could, because the irony of me naming my kid Anakin, having never seen Star Wars, is now, I can't do it now. Sad.
Well, you can name him Boba Fett, and it'll be fine.
There you go.
Bobs. Yeah, Bobs.
Oh, gosh, years ago in X-Files fandom, a group of us had to talk someone out of naming their daughter Scully.
Why didn't they?
That's not
Dana Catherine would have been perfectly fine. They should have just went with that.
That's what we said. Well, how about a middle name?
But that's not,
you know,
that's
how
not
about
on
Dana?
The nose
no.
Yeah. That's not on the nose enough. If you introduce your child as Dana, they're not going to automatically know that it's because you're an X-Files fan. You need a scholar.
I met this kid. He was, it was like a big senior event, and I had been visiting another friend, and she was there doing caricatures for like the senior party that night. And he came up, and she said, "Well, what's your name?" And he said, "My name is Kit." Yes, he is named for Kit from Knight Rider, the car.
Knight Rider.
Knight Industries 2000.
You know what I was thinking?
Yep.
I was like, wait, their mother named their little boy after Kid DeLuca and Pretty Woman? That's where my brain was.
No, she didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he
named him.
He's a character. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But
the car's a bit better than where I was thinking, but okay.
Yeah,
I have a friend who has her first son's name was Samuel, Sam. And so when she was pregnant with her second baby, I said, "Oh, you got to name him Dean." You know, I was just basically teasing her because I was like, "There's no way she's going to do it." So I was like, "Oh, you should name him Dean. Then you'll have your own Sam and Dean and everything." Well, now she ended up naming him Lucas. And now Samuel is 6, I think, and Lucas is 4 or 5. And Lucas came up to her the other day and told her that he's changing his name to Dean.
Lovely.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, she said, and he told her, we have a Sam mom, so I should be Dean. And
oh,
so I was like,
that's hilarious.
You should have listened to me. Lucas knows what he's meant to be.
At least she didn't name him Lucifer.
True.
Oh, gosh.
I'm gonna really plead for the Ackles to not name their daughter Lucy. I'm putting that out there right now. Please not name your daughter Lucy. Thanks.
Lucy Ackles?
Lucy, no. Just because I no. Thank you. Please and thank you. doesn't really have a flow to it anyway. Lucy Ackles doesn't roll off the tongue, so I don't think I have to worry. That was a tangent.
Yeah. You know, it's another sign that this episode is not up to the standards of the last few episodes because we've got several tangents this evening.
Yeah, I tried to pull it away from the fact that we've gotten, like, several episodes in a row that were just so good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have to have a filler. And it was a filler, and it
mm-hmm.
On the merit of fillers, it was, I'd give it a 6.
Yeah,
maybe
it wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. It had a few cute moments, and it's like whatever. And Michelle Morgan as Portia, I thought, was one of the better parts of the episode. Really,
I think she was
terrific.
Actually the outstanding part of the episode. She was she was what kept me the most engaged in the episode. Because
it was
without her, I don't think I would have cared about James, and that's nothing against Christian Campbell's acting or anything. It was just the way the character was written. I didn't have any connection toward James except for the connection that Portia creates for us, and a lot of it had to do with the way Michelle played the character.
He wasn't really in it as much, you know. The episode was about him, but we didn't actually see him that much.
Yeah.
And Portia,
though. No, go ahead.
I completely agree with what you all were saying. Michelle was, the best part. I'm so glad they cast her as Portia because I'm not sure, how somebody else, may have played it completely differently. But she just was perfect, and I just really, I was intrigued by her character, and I hope she comes back.
This is just one of those weird, not so much continuity because it wasn't a continuity error per se, but I find it really strange. Again, this would have been blocked and scripted and, all plotted out. Why do we shackle James to the bed shirtless only to put clothes on him later? Portia shackling him to the bed wearing a nightie? I feel like if I was really concerned for someone's well-being, and I'm going to sit up and watch them and take care of them while they're shackled to the bed, I'm probably going to be wearing, yoga pants. It was peculiar.
We talked about the other day on the phone. I thought it was so funny to hear he's shackled to the bed, but yet they let him out so he could put on a nice sweater and some jeans.
Yeah, it was, if they're going to shackle me to the bed, I should, again, give me, as a female, I want my yoga pants. As a male, I'd be like, could I get some basketball shorts or, a t-shirt? I just feel like that's comfy times. It was really strange wardrobe for me.
Yeah, clothes are not usually the first thing on your mind when you're possibly, a murder suspect and killing people, and there's hunters here who possibly are going to kill you and everything else. It's, your clothing choices are not usually the first thing
mind. One of those things that, because the episode was not engaging me as much as I would have liked it to, you start noticing other things, like the shirt that Sam wears, that blue shirt. I was telling Becky the other day, I feel like it was very dressy.
It was very, very nice shirt to just be sitting around your hotel room in. And that is weird because he wears that shirt that night while he's researching. The next day, he puts on his suit to go talk to the detective. And then he puts that shirt back on. It was really weird.
You're talking about the blue shirt with the white pinstripes.
The stripe, yeah, which is a really nice shirt. I just felt like it was a really nice shirt.
It was a really nice shirt. In fact, it probably belongs with, like, one of his suits, but it also, and I watch Hawaii Five-0, and that's, like, almost the standard shirt choice for Scott Kahn's character. So when I saw it, I went, oh, my God, he's got Dano's shirt from Hawaii Five-0.
And then on the flip side, the shirt that Dean's wearing in that scene, and my friend Aaron, Weinstein Life on Twitter, Dino wore this shirt. This is Dean's shirt from Night Shifter. And then it reappeared a few episodes ago, and then he wore it again. So, and that's my favorite Dean shirt. That plaid, mustard plaid thing. Which in theory should be a really ugly shirt because it's mustard plaid. Like, what is that even? But that is my absolute favorite Dean shirt. It looks, that's like the most attractive shirt on Dean Winchester. I know everybody else, like last week's Henley, I'm all about the mustard plaid. The Henley can stay too. And my mother, when they're having the scene in the witch bar with Philippe the cat, my mother, you know, we're watching it, we're trying to pay attention to it, and my mom goes, God, Dean, wash your jeans. Because his jeans are filthy. They're so dirty. So, yeah. It's just one of those things where, you know, when the episode isn't engaging you as much as you'd like, you start to, you know, your mind starts to wander about really bizarre things. So, yeah, wardrobe was a big sticking point for me in this episode.
And since when is Dean allergic to cats?
Thank you. I want to know. I need an episode with backstory on what Dean's hate-on is for domesticated pets.
And I don't think he's anti-dog, like they said. I understand the dog, like hellhound dog, but in Mystery Spot, he goes up to the golden retriever and says, hey, buddy, and whatever. And
that was when I was thinking about that, too, because I was thinking about that when we get the season premiere of this episode. I mean, really, like, the car smells like dog. And so I kind of wrote that off as, well, you know, it's the Impala. He doesn't want an animal in the Impala.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then this episode, too, I'm like, what? I mean, yeah, okay, fine. The dog in Mystery Spot did kill him once.
Mm-hmm.
But still.
Yeah.
You know,
and the hellhound thing. But, you know, they're not real dogs.
And so, like, in Yellow Fever, before he opens the locker and gets scared by the cat, shouldn't he have been sneezing the whole time? And I think that's the problem, you know, when you give characters really specific quirks in later seasons, it does create a retcon kind of issue. And especially when you do it in a throwaway episode where things aren't necessary and you're doing it just for laughs.
Yeah.
Did, on another different subject, did y'all see Christian Campbell's tweet earlier today? It just absolutely cracked me up. He tweeted, I still have yet to see my episode of Supernatural. I'm a little nervous to watch it. Just hope I didn't screw the pooch with my acting.
Oh.
Man. Nice pun. I appreciate a good pun, so.
Yeah, and you know, I'd like to compliment you guys and myself that the podcast has gone on for an hour and a half and we haven't made a single dog joke reference to this episode. You know, like going to the dogs, barking up the wrong tree. You know, they're all just way too easy. I guess.
If I complain about Philippe Lachaud, I'm not allowed to make a bad dog joke if I want to complain about Philip the cat. So that was my that is my justification for that. I also, like, I think it's really funny, like when the episode title was released months ago and everybody was like, oh, I don't know about this, and you kind of go, well, you know, they're not gonna go anywhere like that. And then on the 10 on top from last weekend, you know, Jensen, during a Jensen interview, he's like, you know, we're not going into bestiality, or are we? And you still kind of go, oh, Jensen, just, you know, you and your funny little self. And then, you know, they kind of went there. So.
Yeah, it was like, I was like, oh, you were telling the truth.
Yeah, you meant that. You were serious on that one. Okay.
But that reminds me, and then Sam has to explain to Dean that, you know, they were intimate, and he's like, huh, what? Of course he's got to know that that Portia meant she and James had had sex. I'm like, good grief. Of course Dean's going to know that. He's not stupid.
I feel like it would have worked out. It would have, neither one of them should need that explained to them. But if you want to go by, like, characterization, then it should have been the other way around.
Hmm.
Because we are trained for Dean to be the sleazy one. As the audience, we're trained for that, Dean's the sleazy one.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have worked a little bit better to have it go over Sam's head rather than have it go over Dean's head. Because you would think that, you know, from the very beginning, before you even find out that Portia and James have an intimate relationship, Dean should have been making those jokes anyway.
Mm.
On a character level.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I think it was really strange, like, I don't know, very little about this episode bothered me, but when Portia accuses him of picturing it, and he goes, no, and he goes, yeah. I don't like the idea of Dean Winchester picturing that the way they're implying he's picturing that. I didn't like that.
That grossed me out a bit.
Yeah, I still, you know, I still like it. I still like the episode.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Like I said, I don't hate it, but I had lots of issues. You know,
I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it. It's not going to be an episode that I
mm-hmm.
pull out to watch on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be like when the TNT rerun of it comes on, I'm not going to be like, ugh, I'll still watch it. It's just kind of
There's only two episodes that when I'm watching, like, through Netflix on the DVDs or something, that I skip. And so this probably won't be one that I skip. I'll probably, you know,
mm-hmm.
watching it.
What else do you skip? What do you skip?
I skip Family Remains. I skip it and Ghostfacers.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care about Ghostfacers. Family Remains.
That's kind of how I feel about this episode. It's the standalone that I'm not going to pull out to watch on its own, but I don't skip it. I don't think of an episode I actually didn't skip.
Kitty, when you were not able to be on last week, and Becky and I were talking about, we were talking about the writing of Davin Laughlin and Andrew Davin, Dan Laughlin, and I said, well, I think they've come a long way. I said, yeah, I was not big at all on Yellow Fever, and she said, I love Yellow Fever, and I think we found our swan song.
Yellow Fever, I'm good with Yellow Fever until the end, because the end doesn't make sense to me, but
mm-hmm.
I like the jokes within it. I do like the jokes within it, and I like seeing Dean act out. The end, like with the solving the case, makes absolutely no sense to me. But if I will listen to Jim Beaver speak Japanese over and over again, I don't care. That's fine with me.
The only thing I don't like about Yellow Fever is how they have to drag that poor guy again. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't like it, and it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
like, he was the victim, so you're gonna re-victimize him in order to solve the case. Issues with that.
Yeah,
but
when we did the podcast for it when it originally aired, I remember we all you know had problems with it then too. It was
mm-hmm.
it's just you know, he was a poor, pitiful guy,
and he already had that done to him once, and then have it done to him again is just wrong. But other than that, it's a great episode.
I do know what episode I always skip. I forgot it first because I always skip it. Roadkill.
Oh.
I like Roadkill. I can see I always skip Roadkill. I can see where you would skip it. It's not one of the best. But I like it.
Yeah.
I will always skip Roadkill, and I will occasionally skip Red Sky. Red Sky Morning. I won't always skip it, but sometimes I'll skip it.
Yeah. Issues, Bella. Yeah, you weren't on, but I pretty much said every week my mantra was, I hate her and I want her dead. And by the end of the season,
severe,
she was.
And it really, I had such issues with Bella because I thought the character made no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this chick that every time she's around the Winchesters are stupid in the head? I didn't understand
it.
And I was too
busy. That was my problem
with
her.
I out of Ruby anyway, so... Which is so hilarious to me, which, I mean, it has nothing to do with the actress, it was all the character, but on Walking Dead, Maggie, played by Lauren Cohen, is, like, my favorite character. She's in my top three characters. So,
yes.
Go figure.
Love her on Walking Dead, I agree.
Yes.
And the most interesting, Bella was on the show was her last episode.
Agreed.
When she's sitting there talking on the phone to Dean before the Hellhounds come to get her, I'm actually like, no, don't kill her. I want her to stay.
Yeah, I finally care about you. Okay, bye.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, finally they figure out how to write her and make her interesting, and we're gone. Okay. Anyway, we have a caller. Hello, we have a caller.
Oh, cool.
So we do. So hello, caller. I'm about to put you on the air.
Hello. Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are
you? Good. I actually was thinking, because I'm a Wiccan, and I was thinking about how it would be so awesome if Sam and Dean got to know a good witch and actually was able to collaborate with the witch.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm drawing a really fine line and saying, like, some things are real and some things aren't, but, you know,
uh-huh.
especially when you start talking about familiars, you know, we don't really have any familiars that can, you know, obviously turn into people and back and forth,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it just stuck me. It's like, well, maybe they can see another side to this, but Dean hates witches so much. It's just
mm-hmm.
Hysterical. Yeah. His reaction is always, witches! Ah!
You know? I know, I wonder why. I mean, he's so anti-witch. I don't know if it's just part of him not liking any monster they hunt or it's something else.
Yeah.
And that reminds
witches,
me another thing about this episode when Portia takes Dean to the club and said, you know, he's the Wiccan from Detroit. And I'm like, no one's going to believe that. I'm sorry. No,
Wiccans can have dirty jeans too, you know.
Yeah, he didn't look quite.
And to our caller, because you're a Wiccan, I kind of want to ask you, like, I thought it was strange that she introduces him as a Wiccan from Detroit, but it's the only time that they call anybody a Wiccan. Everybody else is a witch. Was that weird for you anyway?
That was really where the line starts to get drawn. You know, the witches are, as far as supernatural is concerned, kind of evil and backstabbing and, you know, corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Wiccans, you know, they're peace-loving and very benevolent and love the earth and probably would help you if you needed help. So it wasn't, it was a very confused episode, I think, from the writer's point of view, too. It was very confused, and I think that's why it came off not quite as tight as we have been getting used to the episodes being.
Mm-hmm.
I think Supernatural's trying to make a difference between witches and Wiccan. It seems like they're trying to say, you know, they're similar but different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping.
I would have felt that they would. I feel like they should have given me a little more as to why she chose to address Dean or introduce Dean as a Wiccan, and yet nobody else in the episode is a Wiccan, and nobody questions it. Everyone's like, "Okay, Wiccan from Detroit. Yeah, I've heard."
Was it a mistake, or was there more, and maybe it got cut out of the script, or because I felt like I needed more on that because it pulled me back for a second. I was like, Wiccan. So you know, that's why I like the opportunity to ask an actual Wiccan about that.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And when they go to see Drexel, the informant, and they talk about a warlock, and I'm like, you guys should know. There's no such thing as a warlock. You're a witch. You're a man or a woman, but you're a witch. There's no such thing as a warlock. But then this is the show that couldn't pronounce Samhain. I say that with love because, you know, there's a lot to deal with and a lot to do and a little bit of time to do it in, you know, and they do it fantastic and they do a lot of great work, and nothing's going to be perfect. You know, something is going to slip through here and there. So I don't mean to pick on Supernatural because I do appreciate that they have a lot of work to do.
Absolutely love Supernatural. I think the premise, they need to sit down and get the premise straight as to, okay, what is a witch? What is a Wiccan? What can witches do? Because this is Supernatural, of course. So, obviously, they have supernatural powers. And what can Wiccans do? It was kind of neat at the club where they were playing chess. And I'm going like, oh, telekinesis. I would love to have that power. That would be so cool. They were moving the chess pieces. You know, and I'm like, it kind of reminded me of, other shows where they just have, we have powers that, you know, we obviously don't have. Everybody would love to have, you know, your special power of invisibility. And the astral projection, though, was very good. That was right on.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. That made sense. So
I agree with you. I would like to see an episode maybe where Dean, I guess they could tweak it, where Dean meets a Wiccan, like a real Wiccan, where he kind of has that whole, you're a witch, and she's like, no. I would like that, and like this with ideals a bit. I would like to see that in the future. I think that'd be an interesting way to play that and make it work too. But I would like to see, you know, it seems to be that which is the one thing that Dean just will not waver on. He just, you know, they wavered a bit with Madison and being a werewolf, even though they did end up killing her. It was more or less her choice. You know, they waver with Benny. They wavered with Ruby. There's always this, like, gray area, but with witches, he just has, even with James, like, even finding out James was innocent, he didn't warm up to it at all.
Yeah, when you think about it, witches are more human than they are monster. They're kind of like, the way they're portrayed is they're like evil humans, not necessarily uncontrollable monsters. Like
and
werewolf.
Maybe that's the issue for
him
because it's a human that chooses to do what he considers evil.
And
he doesn't see any good in it. Maybe that's the only thing I can think because we've never gotten any real reason. You know, now I saw Hawk. I always say that wrong.
He specifically mentioned in this episode that Benny and Kate, you know, it was what happened to them was done to them. They didn't choose to be a werewolf or a vampire. It happened to them. But James chose to become a witch.
Yes. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
That was the other
and
thing
why,
I was going to bring up.
Why did James decide to be a witch and not a hunter?
It was implied that because of the alchemist case he worked with Sam and Dean, that he just started reading.
Oh, he did a lot of research. He started doing all the research, and once he started doing the research, he got intrigued into it and then started trying it out and then just became more involved in it.
I'd like to know how many years ago was it supposed to be that James saved their life, and, you know, how long did it take him to get to this level
of
how long did he have to be a witch to get a familiar?
One wasn't it 1 year because he was a rookie the year before, and then he went up to like detective.
Oh, yeah, so it didn't happen overnight. Yeah.
He's a quick learner.
Yeah,
quick study then.
Yeah. Maybe he had a more natural affinity for it than they thought. Maybe there's people in his family that he never knew about, that he actually said, who knows.
Well, I just thought I'd chime in on that. And I just hope that someday they do show another side of Wiccan.
Yeah.
Great. Maybe they get help. We can help sometimes. All right, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
So that's a really good point, Fishwa. What you reminded me that he is, again, going back to the script, is, again, when he threw out Kate, like I was telling Becky the other day, I had to sit there and think, Kate. And then I remembered who she was. And even then, when I remembered who she was, I still questioned myself about it. And only because I do the recaps, and I constantly had to write her name for Bitten. Well, when I told Becky that, Becky was like, who is Kate? Because she didn't even know.
Yeah, I had no idea who it was.
Yeah, and she loved Bitten.
Yeah.
She's that 2% of fandom that was like, yes, Bitten for forever.
Bitten rocks. I love Bitten. One of my favorite episodes, but I had no idea who Kate was.
Which, again, I think was, I don't want to say sloppy writing, because it wasn't sloppy. I just think there are certain things that stick with fandom, and that you bring up within the show as a writer, you have to kind of know, have your pulse. Had he said Madison, nobody would have gone, who?
Yeah.
Right.
You get that who reaction because they didn't interact with Kate. They didn't interact with her at all. It was her story being told to them. Whereas with Madison, boy, did they interact with her, Sam.
I wonder why they...
If he would have said Amy.
And Amy. That's another one.
Someone that in some way was an emotional connection to them. Again, emotionally, that's my thing. I think emotionally this episode was just very... There was a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they specifically went for characters from this season. That's why they only mentioned Benny and Kate. And that's why they didn't mention, Madison or somebody. Because if they're going for Werewolf, Madison would definitely have been the better one to pick.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That could be.
There's a lot of one-shot characters that they could have used that were more familiar. that are more ingrained in the fan base. Let's say that. And I just felt like picking Kate was, I don't know if it was just specific to pick her for season 8, or did nobody want to go back and research beyond season 8 for somebody? I don't know. I watched it with my mother. Her and I watch the show, and she was like, "Who's Kate?" And I told her, I was like, I think it's the girl from Bitten, but don't quote me on that. I'm going to have to look it up. I still had to look it up because I didn't trust my assessment of that.
I didn't know who Kate was either. I didn't know. I don't remember her either. I read her in like a recap or something. Went, oh, that's who Kate is.
Yes.
I did not remember at all. Benny, of course, right away, but not Kate.
I paused the TBR and probably sat there for a good 2 minutes racking my brain trying to figure out,
and I'm telling you, I liked Bitten for the most part. I wasn't somebody who didn't like Bitten. But had I not had to recap that episode and write the name Kate over and over and over and over and over again, I wouldn't have remembered her either. I would have been like, oh, so it's like James, somebody we've never met. Cool.
So it's funny, now that I say it out loud, Benny and Kate, that was maybe they were making a sitcom joke from this season. No, because it was that comedy called Ben and Kate. that's a real stretch, I think.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they were trying it, it didn't work at all. I was amused that Dean wasn't impressed that James had only saved their life once. You know, what did you do? Once, you know, what's that?
I did like the kill only once. Because, yeah, for the Winchester, it is like, big deal, dude, who hasn't?
Oh, somebody just tweeted us a very good point. GM Kit, Jerry Weaver on Twitter, said they chose Kate because they let her go. Sam was arguing to let James go even if he was guilty. They killed Madison. That could be it.
Yeah.
Then I agree with that. I would go. Then I would argue they should have picked Lenore. I just felt like they needed to. I like that idea though. That at least it was somebody that they went. But that could be a reason. That makes so much more sense.
I remembered something I was going to tell you, Vinny. Susan, did you watch Cult this week? Cult, the new show on CW on Tuesdays.
No, I did not.
I need to watch Cult.
Too many shows, not enough time.
But it's on CWTV.com, so go watch it.
You have to dump something. You have to dump something to pick it up because it's that good. It's really good. But guy who Dean and Portia meet in the warehouse, and he's the snitch or whatever. That guy.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Nate on Cult. Matt Davis's brother.
I didn't even recognize him.
I was like, he's so familiar. So I looked him up today, and that's who it is.
Well, that makes sense because Colt filmed in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Interesting.
Yes, I feel like if you're a Supernatural fan, or I guess Vampire Diaries, although I'm really not familiar with that show and that fandom, just very adjacent, I feel like Colt is a show you should watch. I feel like it's... I think it's really interesting.
It's very Twin Peaks-ish to me. The only thing is Twin Peaks had some silliness to it, whereas Cult doesn't have any of the silliness. But whereas they're both seem to be complicated with a good deep mystery, you know, that's where they are familiar to me. And there's the familiar. I feel like if you're a Twin Peaks, X-Files, Supernatural, Vampire Diaries, if that's the kind of show you like, you will love Cult.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will say, I love the, you know, it's a show within a show within a show kind of thing. I will say that it's probably the hardest thing I've ever recapped because I'm going to be doing those recaps also. And wow, is that hard to keep track of everything because it's all Inception-y.
Over on Television Without Pity, the recapper over there is calling the show within a show, inner show, and then the actual show, they call it outer show. So I was like, oh, that's a good way to kind of keep them separated a little bit.
Where it's either we're in Cult or it's the real world for them. Like, either it's Cult or it's the real world, and let's forget that the show is called Cult. And I think that's the confusing part. That's the confusing part for anybody who does meta about the show or recaps the show is that the show is called Cult, and then the show and the show is called Cult. And had they been called two different things, like, I don't know, Cult and Compound? I don't know. It might have been a little easier.
And I don't see how you can
I get that from a TV show creation point of view, being a cult within Cult actually makes it easier for them. It's harder on the rest of us.
I see that Cult is by Rocky S. O'Bannon. I was trying to figure out what channel it was on. And he did Farscape. I'm more impressed, and I will try to make more of it because I loved Farscape. It was fantastic.
And he had originally, the show originally called, I know we're getting off on a huge tangent, but trust me, Cult makes sense as far as Supernatural. So he pitched the show. The show was pitched 5 years ago, and it 5 years ago, like nobody understood it. They're like, I don't know where you're going with this. It doesn't make sense.
And so I find it fascinating how 5 years later, it totally makes sense on a mainstream level, because the way the internet has changed with Twitter and Tumblr being so much more mainstream and things like that, where the geek culture and the fandom cultures, we're not as, it's not as mysterious anymore. It's, you know, now we have a People's Choice Award for it. So, you know, 5 years ago, if you would have told people, like, who's the best fandom, people are going to, the what them? The what? I don't know what that is. So, yeah, I think that part of it's really interesting to me, that, you know, it's a show that has been in the works for 5 years. Plus, Alona Call's super pretty, guys.
It's going to be my new obsession. I can just feel it.
I take it back to Supernatural. If you're a Supernatural fan, watch it for Alona Tall. If you're a Vampire Diaries fan or a Legally Blonde fan, watch it for Matt Davis.
Prison Break fan, watch it for Robert Knepper.
Yeah, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
Jessica Lucas. I never thought I'd say this, but I'm actually happy that we're about to go into that mini rerun season, because because as of March 1st, if they don't reach an agreement, and I hope they do, and they probably will, but I have DirecTV, and there's a whole group of local channels that they're fighting with over money, of course. You know, can we carry you or not? And those channels include CW and CBS.
Always one of those that, you know, it's hard for people have DirecTV, or what's the other one?
Dish Network.
They always want to drop the CW and A&E.
Mm.
I always feel bad. I've got Time Warner, so, you know, they don't take anything away from me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, except for this, occasionally, I like our satellite. It was much better than when we had cable. Cable Joe was crazy.
We have DirecTV also. Luckily, my CW is not in danger. We lost, back a few months ago, I think everybody on DirecTV lost Nickelodeon, TV Land, all those channels for a while. But
it was a whole group. They disappeared.
I didn't watch,
they came back.
I didn't watch those anyway, so it wasn't any big loss to me.
I'm hoping they work it out.
Issue, because I'm a big nerdy iCarly fan, so you can't take Nickelodeon away from me. That doesn't work out. That would be very, very upsetting. So they took Nickelodeon? Did they take Nick at Night also?
Yeah, they
all
took
of them, the entire group.
But how are you going to get your, like, friends fixed? You have
they're
to
back.
Have a friend
they're
fixed.
They're
fixed.
Okay. They came back.
Yeah, because that's taking away iCarly and Friends reruns. And no, I would have rioted. Those are very important things in my life.
They're back now, so no worries. You don't have to worry about us. We're fine.
Losing the CW is one of the reasons that I'm always wary of changing away from cable, because CW and A&E are pretty much all I watch. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Seriously,
I'm always wary. All of a sudden it's going to be my area that loses those.
There are so many shows on the CW that I watch now, and I never thought that would happen. But I watched.
Well, that hasn't happened to me since it was the WB.
Right, yeah. On WB, used to watch a lot of shows, and then, you know, when it turned to CW, not that many. But, like, right now, you know, Supernatural, of course. I watch Vampire Diaries, Arrow, Cult, and Carrie Diaries. That's 5 shows on the CW. That's more than I watch on any of the other networks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, the only thing I don't watch is, I'm behind on Carrie Diaries. I did watch the first episode. I really liked it. I don't watch Vampire Diaries. I tried. Sorry, guys. Didn't work. But I watch almost everything else. I'm tempted to give Beauty and the Beast a shot because I've been seeing people like it got better. We'll see. I don't know. But, yeah, and then I watched Walking Dead and Hell on Wheels on A&E, so. I don't really watch anything on the big three.
Now, what network is Bates Motel going to be on? Is that A&E?
What's that?
I think so. Yeah, because they've been doing the advertisements during Walking Dead.
Because that looks like it's going to be good.
Which show?
Yeah,
I didn't hear that.
Bates Motel.
The show, Bates Motel.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think it's going to
be... we've dissolved into talking about shows on network, so...
Which
relates.
And yes, it's going to be Annie.
That relates, but we have less than 5 minutes left on our live stream. And I admit it, I haven't had dinner yet, and I'm hungry.
I was hoping to get more people calling in about the bigger issues about this episode, but I understand people have other things to do.
We forgot to mention the call-in number, too, so that could be why.
Yeah, we were so busy talking
This was an episode that initially I really didn't care about, but as the discussions grew online, it was an episode I really wanted to talk about. I was like, please talk to me about this.
Yeah. Like y'all said, you know, for a kind of meh monster of the week, it's inspired quite a bit of discussion, which is maybe it goes in the success column for that alone.
Yeah, really, at the end of the day, good television makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
So for that alone, which is, again, why I give it like a 6.8 rather than like a 4.
Mm-hmm.
We come back next week with Remember the Titans. Looks like it's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sounds interesting. And then that is the last new episode.
Until around
April.
I know. Yeah, March 6th, there's a rerun. And then the week after that, that's a rerun. They haven't released the schedule for the week after that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's that time of year. Most shows go off into like a little March hiatus.
Right.
Because then we come back and run the last stretch too. I can't believe it, the season finale. It feels like it just started the season, but
it's amazing how fast the seasons go.
Yes. And
it
we get
like
23 episodes.
Summers last forever, and then the seasons fly by.
Yep. Very annoying. I guess, quickly, I'll say thank you to Michelle Morgan again, or Michelle Morgan, for calling in. She was great fun and a great guest, and did a great job on this episode, Supernatural playing Portia, the familiar. Hope to see her again, along with James. Maybe he'll explain more about his history with the Winchesters and how he saved their lives. Thank everybody for listening. Thank our caller for calling in. We appreciate that. I'm sorry about not mentioning the calling number, but we'll definitely do that next week and hopefully get people calling and get some more discussion going. In the meantime, you can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. You can listen and download our podcast at blogtalkradio.com, Media Boulevard, search for Media Boulevard. You can always go to our website, winchesterbros.com, and click on the Winchester Radio logo. While you're there, you can read all about all the Supernatural news, actors past, present, and future, episodes, et cetera, any charities we have going. Kevin Parks, last week's guest, has his ride to raise money for cancer in memory of Kim Manners, among other things. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Winchester Bros. Again, all the up-to-the-minute Supernatural news coverage. I think that's it, right?
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks. See you.
see you next week.